I was working on a song about Elden Ring before while I was waiting for you guys to get on the call.
Did you make any progress?
Well, this is like Elden Ring. This is the hunt for the Elden Ring. It's a quest that you'll undergo. Don't be too scared to go below, because in the cave is where the treasure hides. You never know what you will find, so pick up your axe and pick up your stave. Don't forget to behave in the quest for the Elden Ring. Elden Ring, this is the hunt for the Elden Ring. Grab your sword. Grab your shield. Head out onto the battlefield. There are orcs. There aren't orcs. But there are zombies aplenty that you will discourse with. Talk to them about their lives. Do they have lovely zombie wives? Then chop off their head and take their runes. You won't be the buffoon in the hunt for the Elden Ring. Elden Ring, this is the hunt for the Elden Ring.
My favorite part of that whole thing was that you had the opportunity to say, don't forget to be brave, but instead you said, don't forget to behave. And I don't know I guess we can start the spoiler cast here. I don't know that I was a particularly well-behaved denizen of the Lands Between. I don't know that I would get good marks from my teacher.
I did bow and curtsy quite a bit, so.
I guess that's fair. And then I killed every god.
Yeah. 6 out of 10. For the song, not the game.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the year.
My name's... Yeah, probably.
I'm sorry.
I'm Griffin, and it's the same. I feel the same.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I never became an Elden Lord.
Aww.
That's sad, but predictable. My name is Ross Farchick, and I know the best game of the week.
Also sad, but predictable. Hi, welcome to the video game club, The Besties. Just by listening, you, my friend, are a member, and I want to do a preamble here. Uh-huh. If you have not completed Elden Ring, or if you have completed Elden Ring, but there's things that you are worried you didn't see and do in Elden Ring that you plan on checking out, then this may not be the episode for you.
Unless
you don't care.
Well, so we're splitting this episode into two parts.
I can't guarantee that. I will try, but yeah. I don't know.
I think we can do it. I have faith. Well, we're going to try to keep the first half before the Grand Dectus lift. Is that how
it's Jesus yeah. Christ. What a bookmark to use.
There's a big elevator that you take.
How about before everything that defeating General Radahn?
That's not even possible.
It's the Royal City Lane down.
The elevator is the closest we can get. I put a lot of thought into this.
I don't remember what happens.
What comes after the elevator is Lane Dell, the Royal Capital. So let's set that as a very clear mid-game bookmark. I will attempt.
But no promises.
Yes. So this is the episode where if you don't care about Elden Ring, we're going to try and not talk about it constantly for the rest of the year by just kind of getting it all out of our systems.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're free to move on. We've already got your downloads, sucker.
That's not true at all, because I still have to play the entire second half. So I'm going to be talking about Jesus this game Christ. All year. I'm sorry, baby.
We are going to talk about this game, Elden Ring. We're going to say everything there is to say about it. Everything. And we're going to do it all after the break.
Fresh, did you come up with the idea for the structure of this episode?
Yeah, a little bit. Well, just I came up with the breaking up, so I'm gonna be really clear about how we're gonna break this up, because in case you don't remember the Grand Dectus lift, which is a giant elevator, but you could technically not even use it and get to the last area.
The areas
we're gonna talk in the first half are Limgrave, which is the starting area. Liurnia, which is the like lakes area to the west of Limgrave. Caelid, which is the kind of the east of Limgrave. It's like the weird buggy place with dragons. And
I just had this image of Russ greeting you as you walk through the gate into the game. Like, what if Russ was the first NPC? And he's like, oh, hey, let me give you the lay of the land. So, okay, you're in Limgrave.
There's also the Weeping Peninsula, which you can
That's part of Limgrave, though.
It's kind of its own thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, somebody who lives in the Weeping Peninsula, they're going to take huge offense to that. Yeah. Okay, it's very much its own thing.
They
it's
really just call it food, the peninsula, its own culture. Too. You don't need to say Weeping if you live
there. I bet you the people living in Limgrave also like see the Weeping Peninsula folks as like the real bridge and tunnel crowd. Because I'm pretty sure you do have to cross a bridge and go through a tunnel to get there.
That is true.
Can we... there's so much to talk about in this game that I don't want to focus too much on effusive praise. So to like frame that, I am curious because we are all to varying degrees like familiar with From Software's body of work. How does this stack up against the other FromSoft games for you all?
Number one with the bullet, baby.
Yeah, easily number one for me.
Yes. Russ?
Yeah, unquestionably, not even close. The best they've done.
For me, Bloodborne still edges it out just barely, but that's because of my own sort of proclivities and the fact that Bloodborne scratched every dark itch that I ever had.
I love the aesthetics of Bloodborne are still edged out for me. Like I really love the way that world looks and operates and the gothic touches there. But like
what is interesting to me about Elden Ring is it's like FromSoft like completely taking the limiters off. So if you look at like a Sekiro, in Sekiro, like there are no there's no cheese, there's no shortcuts really, so to speak. Like you just had to like learn the systems and master them. And then in an Elden Ring, they said, fuck that. Like we are going to fill this world with all these different kinds of like advantages and techniques so that you can always have like an easier time getting past the roadblock that you're stuck at, which is like antithetical to Sekiro. And for me, like this is an incredible game and almost definitely going to be my game of the year. But I feel like the way that Bloodborne kind of walks the line between those two is why it still edges it out.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about one specific aspect of that. So, you know, people have talked about the fact that, you get stuck in a boss, you can go elsewhere. But the interesting thing is that elsewhere is not like meaningless, like cruft or fodder.
No.
Like you would find, like, here's a randomly generated whatever in Skyrim, for example. It's like all meaningful and narratively driven. And so the example that springs to mind is like Castle Morn, which is on the Weeping Peninsula. It's like the southeast tip, I guess, somewhere around there. And it is not at all required. There's no like major there is a boss there, but not like a major required boss. And as you approach it, there's like this amazing story that sort of unfolds where the people, they had sort of like had these creatures that were serving the owners of the castle and the creatures rebelled. And when you get there, it's like in the middle slash at the end of the rebellion, where almost all of the people that live there are slaughtered except for a couple. And you're sort of just uncovering this horror show.
Right.
And again, this is all optional and easily missed. There's like a lot that I missed in Limgrave because I ended up sort of just skipping past it almost accidentally. And so coming back to that stuff and seeing it later in the game, even though it becomes a little bit easier to get through, I still have like a narrative connection to it. In that case, there was like this really like heart-wrenching story of a woman who sends you in to find her father. And you find the father, and the father, you know, begs you to, like, go bring a note back to her or something like that. And you get back to her, and she's dead, and the father's, like, weeping over her. And it's just this brutal, like, gut check thing that is so, again, so easily missed. And there's so much of that throughout this game. And that might seem like a fault, but it's actually thrilling because it means you're constantly stumbling upon these stories that you've never seen before.
And you get a Game of Thrones sword.
Yeah.
So huge. I mean,
very touching, but you also get a Game of Thrones sword.
And we love
it. It's made of more swords.
Did I mention that I was improvising the lyrics to the song?
Because no, I could tell. We figured that out, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't.
I do want to. I've seen the Skyrim comparison a bit, and I do want to say one thing I do not like about Elden Ring is that there are, anytime you get into a, I forget what they're called, like burial sites or something, or catacombs or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the catacombs-y type places.
And then
places,
anytime
yeah.
you get into a mine, those were indistinguishable for the most part from each other, where like if you're in a catacomb, you're going to fight a bunch of fucking skeletons and then you're going to get to the boss at the end and it might be like a black knife assassin. Usually that's like what it's going to be. And then at the end of every mine, there's the crystallarians or whatever they're called. And sometimes they're red and sometimes there's two of them. It felt that was about as uninspired as FromSoft gets, which is only notable because like this is a developer who prides itself on like extremely memorable boss fight,
and the game's like 180 hours long,
right?
Well, so let me counter the comment. I agree with you visually. I think basically all of those underground tunnel-y things look basically the same, and the catacombs look basically the same to one another. From a level design standpoint, they do some of the most interesting things in those levels, because some of them, I did one where intentionally they were having you feel like, wait, I've been here before. And the only way I was able to kind of feel myself around was through like player notes and like, oh, I actually had to go underneath this elevator to get to this second level that was essentially a near duplicate of the level I was just in intentionally to get me turned around to try to like feel my way through. Yeah. So they actually do a lot of really clever stuff in that, even though visually they look very similar to one another.
I think my bigger frustration with them was because of how labyrinthine they were. If you died, it was tough to, like, they're a lot more linear than most of the game. So it's like, I did end up in a lot of slogs where it's like, okay, I got to fight my way through all these idiots to get back to where I was.
But like the crystallarian bosses in particular, like once you have a blunt weapon, you break their like stature once and then Hulkamania just runs by. Like they're very easy bosses once you know how to beat them. And I fought, not a joke, maybe 8 different versions of them at some point across it, which is like, you know, it in any other game, it would not even register as a thing. But in a game made by like the best boss makers in the business right now, it just struck me as a little bit.
What is it he says in the 99 Floors of Fright? They can't all be winners.
Yeah, you know sure.
I
mean?
So I mentioned Castle Morn. Were there other areas that like side areas that stood out to you guys?
I mean, Windmill Town with the fucking dancing, with the fucking Midsummer that dancing is a part fire two. Ladies.
That's a part two thing.
No, I thought that was in Caelid. So oh, you're right.
Definitely
right.
Not. Flawed. Okay. It's definitely, I can tell you, I know this map really
your
well. I can tell you.
The system
two.
Of the structure.
I like this. What Fresh did is he somehow hacked into my Steam Deck and figured out exactly where I was at 80 hours.
Yeah.
Because it's basically like everything I've played, except for, here's a fun thing, haven't played General Radahn because my game literally won't load that fight, and it is what is keeping me from moving.
Is that
forward.
A silly Steam Deck issue?
No.
No.
It. I think I know
no,
actually
there's
how
a trigger
to trigger
he hasn't
it now.
Done yet.
No. I did that too, Fresh.
Okay.
I've done basically everything the game has to offer, but I think that there in this area, but I think I have an idea of why it's not triggering.
So in the first 80 hours, were there any areas that you guys particularly enjoyed?
Yes. Well, before I give an area, I do want to go back to the Sekiro versus this thing, because Sekiro is the game that I bounced off just right away.
Right.
And I think it's kind of hilarious in hindsight that Activision was like, hey, we want to work with From Software to get them to make a game. And From Soft said, okay, we're going to make our most difficult and potentially like unapproachable game with you. It still sold a trillion copies, so I'm sure it worked out for Activision. But I just think it's kind of hilarious that game is, I mean, you have to get good, right? That is the get good game. For this one, it was wild playing it with Fresh, because Fresh is better at games than I am. I will admit it right here on the show. And two, it was
even
just,
though your skill with games is a measure of your masculinity, as we can all
that's true
all attest.
That, and you know, I'm just not a big boy like him. And he was further in the game, but because this game is so big, when we played together, there were a number of places that he helped me with, but there were still areas where I was able to help him. And that felt awesome, because that's the thing that I can't get from you know, Bloodborne or any of these other games, once I was behind, I was just behind, and I immediately felt like, well, I'm never going to be good as everybody else. But to have, even if it's one or two spots that I am the best at, that feels great.
To answer the question that was posed, though, I'm going to say the first time you go down an elevator and you're in Siofra River, the fucking coolest. The fucking coolest. The first time you go down an elevator and it's like, oh, there's a whole nother strata of this world.
It was the exact moment where I thought, I got a pretty good handle on the size and scale of this. And it's like, there's a cave where there are stars in the sky. It's so fucking vague.
It is. I mean, that moment I was like, this is probably a little side like dungeon area that I found. Yeah. And it just kept going bigger and bigger. They do this very smart thing that I wish more games would do, where when you open the map up the first time, the area that you're currently in, so in this case, Limgrave, basically takes up the entire map. So it's like, oh, there's the entire map. And there's no like empty space on the corners. You scroll to the edges and it just stops with the area that you can see. As you explore more of the map, you basically can scroll more and it begins to really actually reveal the scale. So when I was first started playing, I was like, oh, I've made it to Caelid. I've been playing like 50 or 60 hours and the map is basically full. So that, you know, I must be getting pretty close to the end. Yeah. And it turns out I was not even halfway.
Which is great because it allows you to keep focusing on the area that you're in rather than just like, you know, sprinting towards the end.
Right.
I actually like intentionally did not progress so that I felt like, okay, I'd cleared a large chunk of this area.
It's so smart because you say intentionally not progress. And I think that that's like, it is, there's obfuscation, right? On like how progression, like how you will progress, like what the progression is of the main, like if you're talking about a critical path, right? But I think what they've done, that's not uncommon, I think, for a FromSoft game. But I think what's so smart about it and the way they've sort of weaponized it in Elden Ring is to reinforce that, like, this is the game. Like, the things that you're doing, these small encounters that you're having, the castles and dungeons and all that, like, that's the experience. Don't worry so much about whether or not you have, you know, you're getting another piece of the fucking Triforce. Like this is the moment that you're in right now. Like you don't need to sweat the main narrative flow because it'll just kind of work itself out. Like it'll just kind of get there.
And the way they do that is by having major chunks of the game. I mean, namely Ronnie? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah.
Like Ronnie's quest, you have to stumble upon it. Like this huge, huge aspect of the game. And it's one of many like this where you are not directly into whatever comes next, whatever the main thing that you need to do is. I mean, even the major boss fights, right? And that reality makes everything feel equal in a certain way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. My understanding is that you only need to beat two, quote, major bosses to get to the end of the game
or 7 minute speed run that is available right now.
Somebody cracked it under. It was so funny because I think Polygon wrote a story yesterday that was like, holy shit, somebody beat it in under 10 minutes. And then that same day, that person beat it under 7 minutes.
Yeah.
They just like shaved 3 fucking minutes off of the time.
Yeah.
Of the speed
I mean,
run.
I will say that is not, obviously,
it doesn't even look
like
the
they
game.
Are using
yeah.
every like skip of, and teleport yeah, imaginable. But I would say, like, for people that are playing it normally, you really technically only need to, I think, beat two bosses. And because of that, you know, I think people get a little bummed. It's like, oh, I missed this storyline or I missed this character. Or like, the Ranny quest. Plant's right. The Ranny quest is like an enormous quest, it's a lot of content. But if you miss it, there is no impact to your experience.
You would not know that you missed it.
You just wouldn't know. Like I mean, I barely understood the story even doing all these quests. So it's fine. Like, beat the game and then watch the 45-minute lore explainer on YouTube. yeah. And then understand what the fuck is going on. Because otherwise, you just, like, no one is smart enough play this and understand it at the same time.
Every Empyrean needs a shadow and a consort in order to approach the title of Elden Lord. You see, I don't really want to talk anymore about
that. It's a bad idea.
There's a great YouTube video that we can link.
There's a bunch of people who dove into it. But if, as long as we're talking about the first half of this game, I think the first half of this game, I think the whole game beats ass. I think this game for, it does a lot of things that are so impressive given the scale of the game. And I think the most impressive thing is how progression feels. Like, I never felt like an overpowered demigod. Maybe once I figured out the, like, you can chug the potion and then shoot the beam forever. Like, that certainly helped me out to take down a few field bosses every now and then. But, like, until I had discovered that, and even, honestly, for a lot of the parts after it, like, I didn't feel overpowered. I didn't feel underpowered, which may just be, like, because I've played so many of these games and I kind of understand, like, oh, you have to, you know, sometimes you have to grind out some of the materials. You need to upgrade your weapons and et cetera, et cetera. But for the size of this game, to always kind of
the balance
have
is wild.
Yeah, it's so good. And maybe it depends on what kind of build you go for, right? Like, I can't imagine not having some sort of magic or at least like ranged weaponry on it. Like, there's some boss fights that I can't imagine doing it just with melee. So maybe,
but I've seen people like, you know, I've seen people do it on YouTube. I watched a Soul Level 1 playthrough of the game on YouTube. And it was outrageous. The really cool thing is they give you so many tools to abuse every system in the game intentionally. And then you can, like, really, like, make short work of it. I'd recommend trying to play it without doing that, because it really does, like, play the, you know, in some cases, play the game for you. But I think they really wanted you to, like, use your ingenuity and make interesting builds.
I will say this. I think that if I have one... I have issues with Elden Ring, obviously, but something that I think falls a little short in this opening half. When you start playing and they sort of open the world to you, there's definitely like nudging you in a sort of direction. But I have now, including myself and two other people, let's Dad and Travis, who started playing Elden Ring, got to that point where it's like, after you get the ability to level up and you're sitting outside the gates and there's the little, like, I think it's Storm Gate, and then there's the Gatefront Ruins nearby. There is definitely this sense of like, well, what do I do? Like, what do you want me to do? What should I do?
Yeah.
And I don't think they teach the lesson early enough that, like, I don't know, just do what you feel like doing. Like, it just go wherever you feel like going. Because they're kind of hinting that there's a right way to go with the, you know, golden rays coming off of the points of grace.
Yeah.
I wish they had, like, reinforced that lesson a little bit earlier, or found a way to, like, teach you that this is going to be more self-guided than you might be expecting.
They are subtle about it. The closest version of that I can find is, like, at vendors, they'll sell you notes, and if you read the notes, it'll be like, hey, you might want to check out this random corner of the map that might have something interesting there. And that was what got me exploring more than anything else, because you're right, like, otherwise I was just sort of making my way to the castle, because what else am I going to do?
Right.
I think everyone that plays the game eventually will learn that lesson, because you're just constantly swamped in interesting things to run into.
Yeah,
but I agree, like, early on it can feel a little overwhelming. You just have to remind yourself, like, again, no right way to play. You will find dope shit in any direction that you run in.
I also love that you, like, that no matter how powerful you get, it's sort of like there are still areas where it's like, oh fuck, I don't want to be here. Like, I don't like this. It's like the Lake of Rot is not in this half, but there are areas like that where, I mean, think about
Caelid, like, is like a very awful
Caelid's
looking
gross
area.
I hate being
Caelid's
there.
Caelid's terrible. And like, you go there and it's like, it kind of reminds you, like, you think about the strongest, healthiest, most capable person in the world. If there's a volcano, they're still not going to be like, let me fuck with it real quick. Let me get in there real quick and see. Yeah. There, so it keeps that sense of like, I don't like it here. I really don't want to be here much longer. I would like to go, please.
Yeah.
Even when I was like level 100 and I would go to Caelid, it looks like it wants you to leave. It would like you to go. This is not for you.
I have a question for y'all. If the game was everything that we've talked about so far, and the capital, and then the final boss fight was like right after the capital. So basically, again, this first half, would that have been enough game for you? I'm not saying should it be.
150%.
God, it's hard to say.
I would have. I don't think it would have been for the like deep in the pocket souls people, maybe. But like for me, if I've been from, I would have done like chapter one, chapter two.
Yeah.
2022, 2023. Made twice the money. That's what I would
have done. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't, because it really does feel like they made two games and then just gave the second one to us for free, which, I mean, no complaining. I love it.
Thanks. Thank you.
I'm just kind of surprised.
Yeah, it's enormous. As I said, I thought I was getting to the end of the game when I was like exploring the Caelid Tower, and I was like, well, this has got to be it. And it just keeps going. You know, whether you think that's a fault or not is sort of a question. But it's important to remember that, like, most Souls games, your first time through it, Griffin, you would know better than me, 50 hours, 45, 50 hours around there?
I would say 50 to 60 for like Dark Souls 3.
Nothing remotely close to the length of this. Like, easily, this is double the length of any Souls game.
Or triple.
Or trip.
Can we talk bosses real quick in this section? Any of the like
Radahn
is
the best, one of the best boss fights they've ever done.
Rennala?
Radahn. Rennala was fucked up too in like a like genuine pretty. Like Akira way of just.
Let's just remind people who it's yeah, sure. The so, name to
let's talk
committed.
About. Let's talk about
Rennala of the Full Moon.
Rennala of the Full Moon. Okay.
She's at the top of the academy, Raya Lucaria, and she's one of the like main bosses that you have to beat two of in order to like progress through the game. And it's two phases. In the first phase, she's carrying a little womb, and she has a room filled with small versions of her, like tiny little ponyos, just kind of like chilling. And then every once in a while, one of them will like sing, and you have to find the one that's singing and hit them three times to like weaken her. And then the second fight, like, turns into a... The second phase is just a, like, absolutely brutal gauntlet of dodging incredibly powerful one-hit-kill, most of the time, magic spells, and just trying to get in there and get as many hits on her as you possibly
while
can.
While she calls in, like, spirits.
Dragons. And
also, like,
and
everything.
And shoots the moon at you.
Yes. That fight's neat, sort of just, like, conceptually. The Radahn fight is the one that takes place on a huge island. He's a big fucking boy, and he has all these, like, crazy wide-sweeping attacks and gravity spells, but you can summon in virtually every NPC from the game. And so you're just running around this battlefield trying to stay alive as you jump from like golden spawn point to spawn point. Just like, get in here, Alexander! Fucking, like, Patches, you're a fucking piece of shit, but please, God, I need every...
Godhead, get in here!
It's all hands on deck, please!
You sort of chill in the back and you watch 16 guys like wail away at him. And I was just like kind of casting an occasional spell, hoping the aggro wouldn't point at me. Very, very cool fight. I did get one shot more than any other fight in that
absolutely
fight.
Absolutely one of the hardest
fights.
Like
a brutal thing. But what made up for it was when I realized that Radahn, huge though he is actually riding a little tiny normal sized horse.
Right. So the lore of Radahn, if I can talk one lore thing, it's my favorite thing. Radahn is kind of a sweetheart. He loves his horse. Like that's the lore of Radahn, is he loves his horse and he loved riding his horse. And then he like got these Elden Ring powers that made him too big to ride the horse, and it tortured him. And so he learned and mastered gravity magic so that he could make himself light enough to ride his horse again.
Fuck, that's funny.
That's so good.
And then it only gets sadder for Radahn from here.
Yeah, because then he gets cursed with the Crimson Rot, but can't die. So his body is just constantly in agony, but he just wants to be light enough to ride his horse.
Oh.
He's one of the all-time best bosses in any FromSoft game.
That was a great fight. And it's one of those that I like where it's like you play it so many times that things that would be devastating become sort of like just part of the pattern. Like, oh, I got it. Okay, giant arrow is coming past me. Okay, got past that. Like... It was fantastic. I love that fight.
Yeah.
I know we're talking bosses, but I'm gonna talk just an individual enemy, just a normal enemy you face. Yeah. Not a real challenge, but one of my favorites.
It better be a bird.
It's not a bird.
Ah, oh,
it's worse.
The Albanarics.
Oh man,
these are little frog people. They live around Raya Lucaria town, the academy.
The flooded town.
They are amazing. They sort of march around with their like staves and stuff. And when they see you, instead of running at you, they just start doing cartwheels. And it's fucking spectacular. And I love them. And you can dress up as them later. And it's, oh, so great. There's so many like individual mini enemies that just like really stand out to
all
me.
Birds suck.
All birds are hilarious.
All birds are the worst.
I like the bird that throws fire or spits fire at you. They have like helmets and they have giant blades taped to their feet. Yeah. The birds are, they know that the birds are annoying. So they decided, well, if they're annoying, we might as well make them funny.
Yeah.
I respect. I also like how... speaking of that same area that Fresh mentioned, up until that point, everything was like scary, you know? Even the birds, as funny as they were scary. And then you come across dudes who are like, you know what? Let's build a giant car and put a giant head on it and then put a flamethrower coming out of its mouth. And like, yeah, that seems like a great idea. And then it feels completely out of place in the game up until that point.
Well, the tone shifts, like environment to environment, like you're right, feels like a night and day change from Lingrave to Laernia to Caelid look like they're in three different games, which is honestly great from a pacing standpoint, because if you were just in Lingrave the whole time, it'd be kind of boring.
Right.
Yeah. It is amazing. I just loved that.
That castle in general was just so wonderful as somebody who was already focusing on casting. It was so labyrinthian, and there were so many incredible rewards behind hidden walls and down, you know, various like massive ladders and spires.
There was a great moment where I was talking to Russ because we were both kind of doing casting builds, and he was like, oh, did you get the thing that makes the casting speed faster? And I was like, no, did you get the thing that makes the spells cost less? And he's like, no. And we just kind of like compared notes, like, oh, you got to jump off the roof here and then roll off to this side. And
yeah, you think that the dungeon, though, like, I think they call them legacy dungeons or whatever they're called. You think that they're linear, and they do feel much more linear than anything else in the game, but I beat Raya Lucaria and missed a good third of the areas in that dungeon because it was just like off the beaten path, and you had to jump off the right ledge, and there was everything in front of you, and it like that magic, the fact that it persists in the dungeons as well as in the open world is so hard to pull off, and they just... it really doesn't feel like they left anything on the table.
FromSoft is the only, like, one of the only developers I can think of that does really solid, like, level design jokes. Like, really actually, like, set up punchline. Like, you see some weird, like, little alcove, and you follow it for 5 minutes and fight a bunch of dudes, and then at the end of it, you're back where you started. And it's like, oh, okay. So you just, I could have just jumped down the ledge. Okay, great, 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 great. Thank you. All right, excellent. The other one is, this is from the latter half, obviously, because it's, did you guys start a new game plus?
No.
Holy shit. Okay, real quick. If you start a new game plus, you are extremely powerful, obviously, right? So you wipe... the boss, like the first boss you come up with, I still had all my spells and my staff and all my gear, right? So like, fuck this guy. I one-shotted him. The first boss is supposed to kill you, right? Because that's how the story keeps moving forward.
Yeah, this is like literally the first boss when you create your character in a minute later, you fight the guy.
Yeah.
So I kill him and one-shot him. I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah. And then there's this gate off to the right. I'm like, all right, well, let's see. What's up? So I'm following the path. And it's just like leading out to a, just sort of like a perch and like a large, a big stone, perch, and I keep walking. I go out to the edge of the perch, and I'm looking around like, well, where does this go next? Oops, it collapses and kills you. That's how they get you.
That's funny.
How they're like, oh, very good. Very, very good. You beat our guy. Check this out. The ground just randomly collapses beneath you. There's no like preamble. There's no reason. It's just like, now you're dead.
That's so great. The old Kingsfield games that they were like the first games that they made were basically very, very, very rudimentary Souls games in first person with like PS1 era graphics. And they're so slow and not great, but all of them start out with you walking down a road and the road just collapses and you die apropos of nothing. First thing, hi, welcome to Kingsfield. Fuck you. You're dead. Now don't step on that spot anymore. Okay, now you know. Let's awesome. Jump. Let's make the jump.
Okay. We're going to take a break first, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's take a break. We'll come back to talk. We'll take the lift. We're waiting for the lift to descend while you listen to commercials. And then once you're here, we'll have ascended.
Okay, so it should be noted, the reason I picked this was it kind of felt like halfway through the game, but you can reach, it's called the Altus Plateau. You can reach it without taking this lift if you take a side dungeon, which is one of my favorite dungeons in the game. I forget what the name of it is, but it's this amazing climb up the side of the cliff. So you can skip the lift entirely, but... we found ourselves in the Altus Plateau, and it is home to Liendel, the capital city of, I guess, the Lands Between. And one of my, probably just from a level design standpoint, the most complicated level I've ever played in my entire life.
So, which one? Liendel, the whole royal capital is like...
The royal capital is...
An architectural sort of triumph, which you don't think about that much in video games, but... This is a big city, and you can go through a lot of it.
Before we get there, I just wanted to mention the first sort of area that you end up in once you take the lift. I mean, you could end up in different places, but there's sort of a, what would you call it, a ravine? A sort of like the Mirage area. There's this huge pit in the middle that's like forested. Did you guys do the Mirage Rise and the stuff in there?
The Mirage Rise?
Maybe?
There were mirages that you had to track down inside this place that opened up an invisible tower that had mirage magic.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's one of the towers that give you, like, magical powers and stuff, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember. Yes,
is there a dog there?
This is where you get invisibility magic.
I think there are dogs. What are you chasing down? Dogs?
Big armored slow dogs? You know?
Yeah.
No, it's just sort of like mirages that you're trying.
Did you try butthole?
So funny every time. The use of, and this is again not entirely about the second half of the game, but this is the game that proved the concept of player messages as being like genuinely transformative, because there were so many times where I would not have gotten where I got without like a message on the floor telling me there. And sure, a lot of it is like try rump, but a lot of times.
But even those, I will say, like,
they're funny every
really
time.
Help with the, they're funny, but they also have this secondary purpose of like, even when the game feels very insulated and isolated, your experience can be so difficult. When you see those messages, it did give me a little bit of like sense of community.
Yeah.
Like you feel like, yeah, okay, this person got through this. They experienced this. They're commiserating with me rather than like trolling me a lot of
that
time.
Said, I wouldn't want to play it all this way, but I played, you know, probably like 6 or 7 hours on flights to New York and back. And playing without that is nice every once in a while. The first time that point that Fresh talked about of climbing up the side of the cliff and then you come to the kind of like graveyard of trolleys? Like, I don't know what they are. Carts?
They're caskets, they're like the caskets that they're pulling.
Yeah.
That
happened without being online, and it was cool just to see this beautiful, terrifying tableau with nothing all over it. And
it's interesting.
Side.
I was talking to a friend of mine who's playing through Dark Souls 1 for the first time right now, and there was apparently some major hack that was going on with Dark Souls where you could like access people's like personal PC kernel, like major problems, such that they shut the servers down so that anyone who's playing Dark Souls, I think remastered right now, cannot play online.
Oh,
so he's playing it entirely without notes. And it is transformative in the sense of like, I really think these games are designed with notes in mind, such that there's so much that you would never, ever, ever think to try or look at unless there was a note there, short of like rolling into every fucking wall ever.
Yeah.
It actually gives me a little bit of a worry for the future of these games, if only because it's a bummer to me to think that like 10 years from now, if they shut the servers down, someone wouldn't have that experience.
Yeah.
But I do think Elden Ring is better at that insofar as because of the, you know, NPC spirits that you can summon and stuff like that. I think it's a much more enjoyable game even if you didn't have the online, but the online really does help.
The dream would be that you could download a full set of these, right? Like there's some, or like they save like 30 or 40 static of these that randomize. It'd be ideal.
The castle took me so long. That
Which castle
like
are you talking about?
The capital, you mean?
The capital took me so long that it felt like its own game. It felt like once I left there, I was like, holy shit, I thought I would be here forever. Like, I thought that this was just my reality now. It's so complex, but you really do get a sense, like, as you play of like, okay, I kind of remember, I kind of know where I'm at. It's stunning. I mean, like, the skill of the design is like absolutely unfathomable.
Yeah. The part where you have to like climb a dragon that has been speared into the side of the castle. You have to like climb his wing like a bridge. It's so incredible. And then there's like a whole like dungeon of sewers that I didn't know was there until somebody was like telling me about it. And so I like came back to check out the sewers and it led me down like a whole nother thing that took me probably like 3 or 4 hours just to explore the you know, infrastructure underneath the city.
The sewers blew me away. I was like not expecting that at all. The fact that they had this incredibly detailed dungeon nested within this already insanely detailed dungeon. I mean, you know, Justin sort of alluded to it, but just like ignoring the level design, like mastery, the fact that you can like weave through this map and it doesn't feel like you're being guided. Like it feels like you have a lot of control over how you go through it while also being like jaw droppingly stunning from an art design standpoint. Like it looks, every minute looks like concept art, like brought to life.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, from a like technical standpoint, it's not the most advanced game we've ever seen. There's a reason it can run on last generation consoles.
Or on the Steam Deck.
And on the Steam Deck, for that matter, is like, it's not pushing every lighting effect or ray tracing or whatever. But, and this remains true to all their games, really. They are so good at just art design in general that it sort of elevates what would otherwise be maybe not the most detailed environments into something that is just like, something you want to spend dozens and dozens of hours in.
Sure.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the we're focusing a lot on the Royal Capital. There's a lot of other really cool shit that kind of opens up that is all feels sort of optional and branching. That
literally.
Yeah. Yeah. The Haggle Tree, I think is what it's called. Or Hallig Tree.
Halling Tree?
Hallig Tree. Yeah. Is like a weird alternate universe version of this big beautiful golden tree that you like have been looking at the whole time you've been playing the game, only this one is like sick and fucked up and filled with some of the gnarliest enemies in the whole game,
and it's a level. I mean, it's like it's a fully fleshed out like area of the game that, and it's a tree.
Yeah. And then you reach the bottom of it and you fight what is I think the hardest boss in the game.
I couldn't. It was the one I couldn't.
Oh, wow.
Like I couldn't do it.
Oh, wow.
Millennia.
I know.
Yeah. I had to really tap into some deep. I put on the katana. I was like, all right, I'm going to Sekiro this shit. I'm going to tap into the old ways.
What boss was hardest for you?
That one was the easiest for me, but I don't know about
you, because you haven't played it.
Yeah.
There is actually a, it's going around on the internet right now. Apparently there's someone that is putting a summon sign down that whose name is Let Me Solo Her, And if you summon them, they show up. They're completely naked, but for a pot on their head. And they proceed to solo Melania as a summon. It's the most incredible thing. There's a video on YouTube. It's amazing. And that's the sort of community that is sort of fostered around. I mean, there's a lot of butthole jokes, but also like people being very clever about and just like fulfilling fun roles in the game.
Yeah, for sure.
Using the tool set. I watched the video. There's not a single hit that gets landed on this guy. It's outrageous.
I did not love the snowfields.
No.
I did not love that area. It was hard to get around. It was the only time where I felt outclassed by the enemies. Like, I just felt like my spells weren't doing enough damage. Like, I would use almost all my mana to take down, like, a small group of people and had to, like, recharge my mana at the, and I just didn't like the way it looked. That was the area that I probably enjoyed the least, was the snowfields.
Yeah.
I'd agree. Level design wise, it wasn't.
And like, also, you get the fire giant who is like a big sort of like, he's supposed to feel like a huge sort of gate, or what's the gatekeeper boss of just like, well, you gotta be this tough if you want to ride this ride. But he's just not a very, inspired boss fight.
He's a big fucking giant.
He's a big fucking giant that like throws fire at you. It's like not the most exciting thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't my least favorite area though. That was Crumbling Pharamazul.
Oh, I love. Ooh,
I love.
I love Crumbling Pharamazul.
Yeah, that's why I thought love that it. Was so. You know what? I don't dislike. I mean, like, it looks amazing. It just like was so scary the whole time. Like, it really felt like, for a little while, you're trapped there.
Yeah.
Which is terrifying.
There's a moment early on in the first half. Chris Plant, you could experience this. It's in the first half of the game. there's a location called Four Belfries. And yeah. Each of the belfries, as you unlock them using a special item, teleports you to like a random spot somewhere in the map. And one of them teleports you to Pharamazul, which is effectively the last level of the game, more or less. When you're like level 20.
Yeah. I think this might still be used as one of the skips.
So yeah, there's a wrong warp you can do where you go to one of those, you're supposed to warp to this like one little standalone part where you can take a sneak peek at the last level of the game, but there's a way to kind of load in using some weird, like, you know, saving and quitting at certain points to like the actual last level of the game and you're still level 6 or whatever.
When I had done that teleport, I was probably like level 80 or so, something like that. And by that point, I felt like, okay, I had more or less seen like the range that this game could offer. And then suddenly I teleport in and there's a fucking tornado in the middle of a floating city.
Yeah.
And it was like, I don't know how this is possible.
And the biggest fucking dragon I've ever seen just taking pot shots at you from a half mile
right.
away.
Yeah. I love that area. I mean, it was hard. It was really hard, but it usually games kind of lose a lot of steam towards the end, and that felt like a big spike in excitement for me.
I also had been working with the Beast Clergymen. That's like the Death Root collection quest, right? Where like you are supposed to take down these very powerful undead bosses, and then you bring them back and he teaches you all these super powerful incantations. He's the one that D kind of like warps you to, and it's like one of the factions of the game. And then you reach the end of Pharamazula and he's the boss. And he's like, hey, I'm gonna fuck you up now. But then you fuck him up and he takes off his robe and he's like, by the way, I'm basically the god of death. And you're like, oh, okay, that actually makes a lot more sense. Like, your whole thing makes a lot of sense now. I do have to kill you, sadly, you big dog boy. But
yeah.
So is he not there anymore?
No.
Like, if you went back?
I thought he was just disguised as the other guy.
That's what I thought.
I thought it was him. Okay, anyway.
He was, like, cloaking it.
That's how I took
it. Did you guys make much use of, like, the online features?
Yes.
Yeah, I played some with Fresh.
Like summoning in people to help you with
bosses. I definitely summoned a few people. Like for Melania, I summoned. I have no shame in it. Against Reichart, which is like a giant snake man that lives in a volcano. I summoned for that, and I didn't regret it one bit. Because that fight, you get a weapon that is basically unique to that fight. It's a giant spear that shoots lasers. And by summoning, it basically turned into the last scene of fucking Ghostbusters, where three people were just like blasting away at this giant snake, and it was incredible. I really struggled to get
connected to them. I would like, anytime I was struggling with the boss, I would try to hit summon signs, and I kept getting errors like someone else had summoned them first.
Yeah, there is a weirdness to it where it was a little finicky and whether the servers were acting up or not. But once it worked, it generally worked consistently in that game. But I found those experiences to be really good. I also set myself to be summoned by other people when I was just like looking for something fun to do. And that was a blast because I'd like get summoned into dungeons that I had already beaten and knew really well and could like really help people that were struggling. And that felt great.
Is that geographically locked? Like, is that like, do you get pulled into places that are near you?
Yeah, it's a little bit confusing. There's a setting that you can do in the multiplayer menu that is very unclear, but basically, when you turn it on, it creates your summon sign anywhere in the region that you're in. So Limgrave is a region, or Liurnia is a region, or the Upper North, Liendel, etc. But it's bridged by level. So if you like over-level yourself to 100 and then try to get summoned in Limgrave, you probably won't.
Right.
Maybe you'll get summoned by New Game Plus people, I'm not sure. But it is sort of banded in that way. So if you're looking to help people out, try not to totally overlevel yourself. I was getting summoned in Liurnia around level 80 and consistently getting summoned, and it was a lot of fun.
I wanted to say I actually did not do a lot of other player summoning, but that's because when you do that, it disables the spirit ashes, which are like your summonable friends. And once, I would say the most broken thing in the game, like the thing that once you find it, it decreases the difficulty of the game, I would say dramatically, is the mimic tier ashes, which essentially lets you summon a double of yourself, like an AI controlled version of yourself with all your stats, equipment, spells, all that. And so for the Rykard fight, I was having a tough time with it. And then I realized like, wait a minute. And I equipped that serpent hunter spear or whatever, like the special spear you're supposed to use. And then I summoned my mimic and he had it too. And so I just took off all my spells. I took off all the other shit that could give him options of things to do except use this special weapon. And so me fucked this big snake up royally, and it was very satisfying. And I feel like that was, I think there's also some scaling that happens when you summon other players where the boss's like health and damage gets a little bit higher, but that does not happen when you use Spirit Ashes. So like, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I used the Mimic Tier once on a Godfrey fight pretty late in the game. And it made the fight so easy that I was like, eh. And so I intentionally like stopped using it just to like give myself a little bit more of an interesting fight in the game.
Yeah.
But
I mostly use the headless, struggling. I like leveled up the head, whatever his name is, the headless hunter spirit Ash. I like leveled them up first and foremost. And so that was who I rolled with most of the time. But
yeah, I used the crystal. There's like crystal stone guys that you can summon, the crystalline people.
Yeah, yeah.
One of those was great. And I used Black Knight Teesh, Black Knife Teesh very late brutal. In the game.
Okay, can we talk endings real quick? Is that too far? Because the ending I got is my favorite thing about the game. So I did the whole Ronnie side quest.
Yes.
I did the whole thing, and it is a long side quest. But the whole time, she is this sorceress that is like telling you like this world fucking sucks. And once I am put in control of this world, and I have made the Elden Lord, like I will introduce this equality that will disrupt the Golden Order and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yes, that rules all this shit you got going on here, worshiping the moon. I am loving it. So I did the whole quest. And then I think I married her at the end of it. And I was like, yes, Ronnie, me and you are going to change this whole place. So fast forward 30 hours and I'm exploring the sewers underneath of the royal capital. And I reach the bottom and there's a boss in this like church, and I'm like, okay, and I fucked him up, and then I was like running around looking for secrets and drops and other items, and this this big like table moves aside and opens a hole in the floor. I'm like, oh, okay, let's see what this is. And so I go down it, and it's just this deep, 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 like, burial grounds where you have to do, like, all this crazy, very intricate platforming that took me, no joke, 20 tries maybe to get to the bottom of it without falling off, because it's a lot of, like, very, very, very tight jumps. And I reach the bottom of it, and all that's down there is a big glowing red door. And I was like, okay, that's weird. And then there was a player message written in front of the door that I forget what the message was, but it had like an avatar doing an emote, and the avatar was naked. And it said something in the message about like, try unarmored, et cetera, something like intimating, like, take your clothes off. And so I stripped down, and then it kicked off a cutscene where the door opened, and this three-fingered hand, not a two-fingers, three-fingers hand that is kind of on fire, wraps around me and brands me with the frenzied flame.
Yep.
My eyes are now on fire. My eyes are glowing red. I have red crackling skin. And the next time I go to a point of grace to rest, I get a visit from our maiden. What's her name?
Something with an M.
Yeah. And she's like, hey, you have fucked up now. I cannot be your road dog anymore. This is profane what you have done. And if I ever see you again, I'm going to have to kill you. Peace out. And then she dips. Yeah. And I have to I can level up still like on my own, but she's gone. And at the end, there's a point where you have to ignite this very bad fire. And I had just talked to Justin, who you had suggested that she's like sacrifices herself to like light this fire, and then she's gone that way. Only I didn't have to do that because I'm already the frenzied flame. And so I set this big, crazy fire. And then I reach the end of the game, and I don't become the Elden Lord. I don't ascend in any way. I burn the whole world down. I introduce basically the apocalypse, which from as far as I can tell is the bad ending. And it ends with the maiden showing up at the end, and she's like a little bit older and way more badass. And she's like, well, now I have to find you and bring to you your destined death. And I will hunt you across the world until, and I will not rest until you are dead. Cut to black, show credits. George R. R. Martin did it again. I didn't, and I found out that there was a Ronnie ending that kind of beats ass. That's kind of like
Ronnie
ending's
very good.
Super cool. But I didn't get it because some player message was like, hey, take your fucking clothes off. There's this whole side quest where the people talk about the frenzied flame. It's the guy like in Caelid who's like, find me a golden needle and use it on this maiden. And like basically just sort of they sort of start to suggest like, hey, you should burn the whole fucking world down. Hey, you should destroy the whole world. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
I didn't do any of that shit. I just saw one player message that was like, take off your clothes, bro. And I did that, and it destroyed my entire game. Like, it destroyed the whole planet. And that is, to me, the funniest and most, like, it's symbolic from software thing, where it's like, I did all this work, and the one tri-finger butthole destroyed the entire fucking planet. It was so funny. It was so good. And a little disappointed that I didn't
get it. It was a tri-finger butthole.
It was a tri-finger? Yeah, sure, of course. Did you get the Ronnie one then, Russ?
I did the same thing you did. I touched the door. I got naked. I touched the door. And after I did that, I read a note on the ground that was like, regret.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no, what have I done? And it turns out, I talked to a buddy of mine who said, there is a way to actually reverse the frenzied flame and get your endings back if you want to do that. So I was like, I'm going to beat it as frenzied flame, but I'm going to back up my save and see the other endings. So that's what I did. And the quest to reverse the frenzy flame is awesome. It's worth doing.
Okay.
Super, super cool.
Yeah.
I think the endings, I mean, A, they don't make a whole lot of sense. Frenzy flame makes sense because you just blow up the earth. The other ones, including the Rhino one, even though it looks really cool, doesn't make a ton of sense. I would also say I was a little bit bummed to find out that most of the endings are like very, very similar to one another.
Yeah.
Including like the Dung Eater
there's
ending.
There's a Dookie
and stuff
Man
like that.
Ending where the Dookie Man is like, I want to give everyone my Dookie disease. Will you help me?
Yeah.
And you go through the game collecting like Dookie pods and bring them back to him. He's like, yes, yes, this is very good. Make sure when you take the Elden Ring that you make a special wish upon a star that everyone gets my Dookie disease. And then everyone gets the Dookie disease. And you're like,
everyone just gets
I'm
all Dookie.
Of Dookie Town.
I wish they were a little more involved, but overall, I think it's probably the best game I've ever played, and I don't know what else to really... I just is. I can't think of another game that I would enjoy playing more.
I started playing it again, and it just immediately was so fun. I didn't want to stop playing. I spent fucking, I don't know, 80 to 100 hours on it before. And then I started, you know what's great? You get a new game plus, and you're right back in these areas, but like, and it's areas that were really scary before. And it, these are, while some areas never get like that, there, the early areas just feel like, hey, everybody, it's me. I know how to make meteors from my asshole.
And honestly, like, all I wanted to do, I mean, I haven't started it yet, but once I do, all I want to do is do a completely different playthrough with like a completely different class. And I'll do all melee instead of almost all ranged, and like, just like try something completely different. Cause the game is so smart about it, like the way it makes every playstyle fun to play as.
Sure.
It's sick. It's a great game. You should play it. Play it.
Okay.
I've played that. The only thing that I don't like about this game, and it's not the get good thing, it's the pressure to like finish this awesome game in like a month and a half.
You don't have to.
I'm not going to. But I feel like I am not the only person I've seen where it's like, I love this game. It's 100 and some hours long. Why does it feel like I have to keep
Chris
playing?
Chris Plant, it wouldn't matter. I could give you 5 years and you wouldn't beat the game. So realistically speaking, wrong or right?
Nag.
But is it false? Have you beaten Breath of the Wild?
What?
Have you beaten Breath of the Wild?
Oh, he's beaten Breath of the Wild. That game's been out forever.
No.
Oh, never mind then.
Why know the irony? I quit playing Breath of the Wild to play this.
That's bad, because those games came out about 5 years apart from each other.
That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter how long. I mean, it's fine. I get the... Chris Plant wants to try a lot of different things, and I get it. So, like, I don't knock him for that. But if you think that's a bad thing, you should remember that, like, whatever. Who cares if you beat the game or not?
Oh, no. I'm not. I'm saying the culture around it. Like, this has nothing to do with the game. I just think that there's, like, a, like, tacit pressure to, like, beat games fast. And I think it's especially brutal with this game.
I think so too. I saw a great tweet, and I forget who it's from, I apologize, where somebody was like, actually, Elden Ring is not as hard as people make it out to be. What makes it hard is this, the pressure from people who have played these games before, where it's like, well, if you summon spirit ashes, then you're not really getting the full experience of the, like, there are ways you can twist this game to a point and customize yourself to a point where you can get through it. I genuinely feel like anybody who is competent at action games can get through it. But there's this guilt that folks try to associate with that. And that is what makes it sort of,
letting go of that was the best. Like, I found this really cherry farm spot and I just like went whole hog. And it was like, I just turn on a podcast, zone out, and then kill this giant crow over and over and over again. And I was loving it. It was grand. And then you know what? After I did it a bunch, I gained like 20 levels and I whipped everything's ass. And it was very good and I liked it.
Very quick before we end, did any of y'all see the New York Times piece that went up this week about Elden Ring?
No.
Oh my gosh. The New York Times has really outdone itself.
Oh boy.
They make comparisons to Don't Look Up, which is great. There is a line in it that's like, let me see if I can find it really quick. It's difficult to imagine Elden Ring succeeding in any other era. In year three of the pandemic, yada yada, it goes into a whole pandemic spiel.
Gosh.
The footage of the game is captured with a smartphone on a TV.
That's good.
Holy shit.
It is wild. My favorite part though is they reached out to Miyazaki, the game's director, for comment, and he turned down the New York Times.
Oh, bless that. What a fucking rock star he is.
It's so good.
You guys been playing anything else?
Not a ton, but I am watching something else, and it's a show that I know at least one of you has been watching.
Yeah.
And it's called Old Enough on Netflix.
It's like the remake of the Japanese show, right? Or is it?
Yeah, so there is a Japanese show. I understand, it is still running. It's been running for about 30 years, and it's called First Errand.
Yeah.
And the premise of the Japanese show is that you, It's a reality show where they send 2, 3, 4-year-olds out into a village to complete various like object tasks. So like, hey, you need to go buy fish for your mom, or you need to go buy a medallion at this nearby shrine. And they follow the kids with a film crew that is like in disguise as like painters and gardeners and various other things. And their cameras are like in disguise as like watering cans. And so they get like genuine footage of these very, very, very young kids trying to like do normal everyday things. And it's fucking fantastic. Each episode is like 10 to 15 minutes long. I've watched 5 of them. I am majorly addicted. Episode 3 involves like a very tense moment with a cabbage that is just spectacular. It's probably my favorite reality show of all time. So do yourself a favor. It's called Old Enough on Netflix.
I saw a movie in a movie theater. Well, I saw 2. I'm going to say Sonic the Hedgehog 2. I don't know if it's as good as the first. I loved the first one. I thought the first, and maybe it's just because it was so much better than I was expecting. I had a lot of fun with Sonic the Hedgehog 2. I had a good time. There's a lot of good action sequences in there and some moments that are pretty badass. I had a good time with it. But the movie I really want to recommend that I saw with Rachel and like the first like time we've gotten away from the baby in a long time was Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is we walked out of it saying like, well, that's one of my favorite movies I think I've ever seen. It is the hardest I've laughed in a theater, I think, is at a joke that is so well executed in this film, and it comes back to it so many times, and every time I was like getting self-conscious, like, am I laughing too loud at this joke? But it's
does it involve Pixar?
Yes. There's badass fight scenes throughout, like really very, very good martial arts fight scenes that are also very, very funny. And then also, like, it made me cry at the end. Like, it hits some family stuff that, like, actually hits so right. It has a little bit of everything for everyone. It's one of the best movies I think I've ever seen. And I have been recommending it to everybody that I meet because I think it's a very special film. And I think that everybody should see it.
I saw that in RRR on the same evening. And it was one of the best film moments of my life. But I both those are only in theaters right now. So I'm going to recommend a game to Perfect Tides. Have y'all heard about this?
No.
Oh, Justin especially. What if I told you there is a point and click adventure with kind of that like early 2000s MS Paint fan art aesthetic, and you play as a young girl in the like Northeast who is a emo scene kid, and it is just about your like kind of day-to-day life. All
that sounds pretty bad.
No, it's so good. It is.
So I'm wrong. My impression of this is incorrect. Even though that sounds unpleasurable, it actually is very.
It's boring. Very. I think you would like it. I think.
Oh, that, I don't know about that.
I think you should give it a check. I think you will like it. It's,
did you say the name of the game?
Perfect Tides.
On Stranger Tides.
Perfect.
Perfect Tides. Perfect Tides. What's the aesthetic like?
Well, like it's that kind of like that Shockwave art, MS Paint art. I don't know a good way of describing it. Somewhere between that and the like Maniac Mansion point and click adventure art. It's wonderful.
I'll try it. I'm skittish because I've tried to play Norco 3 times this
week. Oh, this.
And I just can't.
Yeah, so the vibe Norco. Of this one, Norco, I like Norco, but I understand why people bounce off of it. I think the writing is quite purple at times, though I think that is intentional. This is much more pleasant to be in. It's just a good hang.
Okay.
What about you, Hoops?
I mean, Cash Solitaire, obviously, kind of second job at this point, like making so many buckets. Nobody can take me down on the king, except when I lose, in which case I've deleted the app many times. The other stuff, let's see. I finished Tunic. It's fucking brilliant. If you haven't played Tunic, like, go play Tunic, obviously. Two great television shows to recommend to you all. One is old, one is new. The old one is Atlanta, which I am like, I did not watch, even though everybody says it's outrageously good. And it turns out it is outrageously good. It's only like 22 minutes for each episode, and it's on Hulu, and everybody in it is great. Lakeith Stanfield's great, and Donald Glover's great, and everybody's great, and it's funny and tense and emotional. And watch the first one if you don't like it, I'll be shocked, because it is imminently watchable. I didn't know what I was expecting, but it was not something that was as fun and pleasant to watch. The other one that's in the same vein is Minx, which is on HBO Max. You guys watch Minx? Plant, you would like Minx. Did you watch Minx?
No.
It is a...
Oh, is this about it's about the like kind of like playgirl type of thing?
Sort of, yeah. It's about a woman who's a feminist who starts the wants to start a magazine called The Matriarchy Awakens. And she meets a pornographer played by Jake Johnson, who I love in everything, obviously, because he's hysterical. But he's a pornographer that likes what she's doing, but thinks it could use a little something extra. So he brings her into his basically pornography empire to let her run this magazine, provided that it has naked dudes in it, because he thinks that that's like that could be a big thing. So it's what's fascinating about it is that it kind of like examines feminism from a reverse perspective of like she is struggling with the fact that she's basically objectifying dudes. And by reversing the gender roles and exploring some of these like feminist ideas, it gets at really interesting like conclusions about them. Or at least that was my read on it. Obviously, I'm not a classically smart person, but that I did find it very fascinating, and it's really, really funny. I feel like very, very kind of sex positive, and Jake Johnson is great as always, and it's just fantastic. I really, really enjoy it. It's called Minx, and it's on HBO Max. While I was describing that, my internet died, and so I lost the other three. So it's just me here now. Isn't that fun? I think that's fun. It's my show now. So you should absolutely review our show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. We really have done that recently. So thank you. That really it really helps us out. Oh, thanks to Ryan Parker Moon, George S., Jake Weserick, and Bobaloo for reviewing the show. We appreciate you. Recapping the games discussed. Well, it was Elden Ring. Griffin saw everything, everyone at once at the same time. Chris Plant played Perfect Tides. Russ suggested Old Enough on Netflix. And that's going to do it for us for this episode. Be sure to join us again next time for the Besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games? Besties.
Bestie!